Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. Me.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered. For just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy B. Wilson.
So you probably know the name Isaac Singer because the Singer name is still emblazoned on sewing machines available to all of us today. But there is so much more to his life story than that particular innovation. We mentioned when we did our episode several years ago on the patent wars around the sewing machine that his life story was sort of fascinating and merited its own episode. And he is finally getting it. But I will tell you up front, he's not really a heroic figure.
No.
Although he has like a hard scrabble start and you really want to root for him, he also was a big fan of kind of shady business dealings. He had a very violent temper. And there are a whole lot of women and children in this story.
Singer was born on October 27th, 1811 in Pittstown, New York. His father, Adam Singer, was a German immigrant from Saxony. The name Singer is shortened from the family name Reisinger. It's a change Adam made after arriving in the United States. Adam and his wife, American-born Ruth Benson, had seven other children in addition to Isaac. And not long after Isaac was born, the family moved to the township of Granby in the relatively unpopulated Oswego County.
And the family was not wealthy. Adam Singer had worked as a millwright, which was a job that required both technological skill and some know-how and ingenuity, but it was really an underpaid field prior to unionization. But then when they moved away from Pittstown and to Granby, that wasn't really a job that was available. They were basically homesteaders by this point, trying to tame a land that really was largely still wilderness.
As a side note, Oswego was in the midst of an area that was really considered a theater in the War of 1812, although the residents of that area seemed to have pretty much been onlookers rather than active participants. They were not really strongly affected by the war, even though it was part of the war theater.
Yeah, it was happening around them, but it seemed like it didn't. There were so few of them, for one thing, that it wasn't like, and the town was attacked because there weren't really towns. It was very scattered. So Isaac, for his part, had only a very basic education at this point. The school where he learned was new. It had been built by collecting money from families of the area. And there's some suggestion from his own recollections and interviews that he gave later in his life that his father actually kept him away from school. And the family home was generally characterized as pretty tumultuous. Adam and Ruth did divorce in 1821. And as part of coverture laws of the time, a woman lost all claim to any property of their husbands if they petitioned for divorce. And children fell under a similar provision. They gave up rights to guardianship of their children. So Isaac never saw his mother again after this point.
Adam remarried 2 years after the divorce, but Isaac never really bonded with his stepmother. So just 12 years old, he left home. He struck out for Rochester. It is possible, though kind of unconfirmed, that he first stayed with an older brother once he got there. He sought out a school to attend, and he spent most of the next 7 years trying to make up for his previous lack of education.
Yeah, and that is sort of a really interesting aspect of his story. Like, he was not required to go to school at this point. That was a voluntary school attendance on his part, because he really did feel like he would have rather been going to school throughout his childhood. And when he was 19, Singer got a position as a machinist's apprentice. And this seemed like he was on track for a really stable career. This was actually considered sort of cutting-edge technology at the time. But this apprenticeship only lasted 4 months. Singer would later claim that in those 4 months, he had learned all that a normal apprentice would have learned in the customary 7 years of study with a master.
But an entirely different interest had grabbed the young man's attention, and that was acting. He started taking odd jobs with the Rochester Theater, doing everything from taking tickets to being a prop man, all the while waiting to finally be cast in a play. He did eventually earn some small parts, and then the lead role in Shakespeare's Richard III. He would later tell reporters that he was, quote, one of the best Richards of his day. He was not very modest. And also, the reviewers did not agree with him.
No. And around this same time, he met a young woman named Catherine Maria Haley. And Singer, who was 19 still at this point, married her in December of 1830. And he had the first of many children just a few years later. But Singer was often gone. He would travel to other towns for theater jobs, which he held in addition to a day job that he had at a dry goods store in the town of Port Gibson where they lived. But he was pretty half-hearted about his dedication to that regular job.
In 1836, Isaac, Catherine, and the baby moved to New York City. At the time, rumors were already swirling in Port Gibson that Singer had come to know a great many of the ladies there quite intimately.
This is the kind of rumor that will crop up over and over in today's episode. In New York, Isaac took some odd jobs to make ends meet. And there were, once again, almost immediately, rumors of his proclivity to be unfaithful to his wife. But at this point, he was more concerned with pursuing his acting career than he was with his reputation.
He joined a group called the Baltimore Strolling Players in 1836, once again taking any jobs that he could until he could break into acting roles with them. It was while performing with the Strolling Players in Baltimore that Isaac met 18-year-old Mary Ann Sponsler.
And it wasn't long before Singer proposed to Sponsler. And in autumn of 1836, he moved her to New York City. Imagine her surprise when she discovered a wife and child in the mix. However, Singer was a very smooth talker. He was apparently very charming with the ladies. And he convinced his young love that his marriage was all but over and that they should live as husband and wife while he worked out his divorce so that they could then be legally married.
In the meantime, Isaac and his actual wife, Catherine, had another child, although Isaac would continue his relationship with Mary Ann Sponsler for the next 24 years.
She was patient, and he was apparently very, very charming and convincing.
And they had 10 children together over that 24 years. Unlike Sponsler, though, Catherine did not stick around. She took her two kids and moved in with her parents. Their divorce didn't actually happen for more than 2 decades, though.
And though he claimed to adore Sponsler, Singer was not really around for her either, even as she was bearing many, many children. He was once again traveling to find work, sometimes at this point as a day laborer. And in 1839, at the age of 28, he invented a rock drilling machine. This ended up sort of designed for government use, and he filed a patent on it. And he sold the rights to that patent for $2,000, which was a substantial amount of money at the time.
Seems like he used that money to start a theater troupe called the Merritt Players, and they went on a national tour. Mary Ann and their first son joined him on the road, and the family and the rest of the troupe spent 1839 to 1844 mostly in a wagon while they went from town to town. Mary Ann and Isaac had three more children during this period of constant travel.
That sounds so miserable to me, but what do I know? Singer, who performed under the name Isaac Merritt during this time, finally ran out of money, and he had to shutter his theater enterprise in 1844. Out of money and done with acting after trying and failing to earn a living at it for 14 years at this point, Singer instead picked up right where he left off career-wise before his stint on the stage, and he once again turned to machine work.
We will talk about his return to working with machines in just a moment, but first we're going to pause for a brief word from sponsor.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Singer set up a shop in Pittsburgh in 1846 that made wood-type letters and raised sign letters. And a few years later in 1849, he patented his second invention, and that was a wood and metal carving machine. So this basically could make printing type for in lettered blocks. And he decided to move to New York City once again, this time with the intent to set up shop as a manufacturer, and he established a factory there to mass produce these carving devices.
His family suffered while he followed this dream. At this point, there were 6 children, not enough money to cover expenses and anything but the most bare way. And he persevered, though. He did manage to set up a machine shop, but this little factory was really short-lived. A boiler explosion destroyed the entire business, and 63 people died when that happened. While Singer himself survived because he was out at the time of the explosion, he was destitute. He eventually convinced George B. Zeber, who was a publisher and bookseller, to invest in his carving machine so he could build another prototype to replace the one that had been destroyed in the explosion.
And just in the children tally, I feel like I should mention that those 6 children were the ones he had with Mary Ann. Catherine still had the other 2 children elsewhere. She was living, I believe, with her family at the time. And Singer had to move his shop to Boston as part of his agreement with Zeber, which he did, although his family stayed behind. And in point of fact, it was actually both families staying behind in New York City, because by random happenstance, his wife Catherine moved into the city and ended up just a few blocks away from his home with Mary Ann, just to keep everything super awkward.
While nobody in the publishing industry seemed really interested in Singer's carving machine, Singer and his partner were interested in something new that they saw in the shop they had rented, and that was sewing machines.
Yeah, they had rented a little space in this shop where they could kind of show off their piece and have people come and visit and see it. And also in this shop were lots of sewing machines. So since his business was non-existent, Isaac started examining the various sewing machines that came into the shop, which was owned by a man named Orson C. Phelps. And as you may recall from our episode from several years ago about the invention of the sewing machine, they were still very, very new at the time, and there was not one basic approach to how they worked, but several. So there were multiple different designs. Because numerous different entrepreneurs were vying to establish themselves as the manufacturer of the best sewing machine.
There's some discrepancy in the accounts of Singer and Phelps as to exactly how this situation sparked Singer's work on a new version of the sewing machine. Phelps claimed to have challenged Singer to come up with a design since he was quick to point out what was faulty in all the models that he saw. But Singer was initially not interested and pretty reluctant. Singer, of course, left all that out when talking about his invention later.
Yeah, he definitely describes it much more as being really inspired to fix the problems of others. But in the end, Singer, Zeber, and Phelps did enter into a partnership in which Phelps offered workspace. Zeber contributed financially, although he was really quite strapped at this point, having put a lot of money into this carving machine that they were working on, and then Singer handled the design and the building. And it was less than 2 weeks, only 11 days, from when he had the idea and figured out his design to when he had a first model built. And so for clarity, sometimes when you read this, it makes it sound like he just went off by himself and toiled like a madman in a small room alone. But he was not doing this toiling solo. He had men from Phelps's machine shop at his disposal, and he conducted the whole business with equal parts of foul temper and charm as he got all of these men working on things. He apparently was a bit moody, and sometimes he would yell at the workmen, and sometimes he would sing to them.
Singer's machine made use of many of the technologies that other inventors had already come up with. It could stitch continuously on a free arm, and it could stitch curves. He added a thread control mechanism and moved the needle into vertical positions. Singer's machine included a presser foot, which offered greater control of the fabric as it passed through the needle's stitching mechanism, and it could sew at a blazing 900 stitches a minute.
And for context of how amazing this is, you have to remember that this was a time when sewing was an essential skill for just about every woman who kept a house, and sewing was extremely time-consuming. She had to do all of the hand stitching that maintained her family's wardrobe, and that took up a significant chunk of her life normally.
Singer went back to New York to apply for the patent on the machine, as well as for the birth of yet another child with Mary Ann. Isaac allegedly showed the midwife and the nurse who were on hand this exceptional machine that he had designed for sewing, even while Mary Ann was in labor to deliver their child. Unfortunately, the new baby only survived for a few days.
He also kept from his partners the fact that while he was in New York filing the patent for this trip, he only put his name on the paperwork.
What a jerk.
Pretty much.
Isaac Singer and his partners immediately started advertising and marketing the sewing machine, and Singer called on his experience in the theater to do so. He would stage demonstrations at fairs and in stores, and he would sing a melodic version of the poem The Song of the Shirt by Thomas Hood throughout these demonstrations to try to help draw in crowds. And this machine worked, and it worked really well. Previous versions of the sewing machine had been persnickety and prone to breaking down, but the Singer machine was consistent and sturdy.
Yeah, I will give him that for sure.
The reputation that continued to follow. I mean, I haven't bought a sewing machine in a long time, but I know when I was learning on my mother's Singer, that was still the reputation they had.
Yeah, they, we'll talk about it a little at the end. They had a little dip in the, like, 80s and 90s, but then they've kind of bounced back. And again, I mean, you have to give him credit. He really did sort of smooth out the problems that most machines had. And that Song of the Shirt, if you've never heard it, is kind of about a person toiling and, you know, needing to take time to work on things. So, while we credit him with smoothing out a lot of problems there in terms of the engineering of the sewing machine, as you know, if you listen to our episode on the sewing machine and its invention, you know that many of those previously existing technologies that Singer was using had been created or significantly modified by a man named Elias Howe. And when Howe got wind of Singer's machine, which happened when he saw one of Singer's older sons demonstrating it, he immediately claimed patent infringement.
Howe first demanded a royalty payment of $2,000, but Singer, who was not the least bit shy about being aggressive in business, responded with physical threats. This basically kicked off a long and contentious relationship for the two men, and we won't rehash the entire thing since we talked about it in detail in that previous episode, but here are some highlights.
As Howe, who had pursued legal action against several other inventors who he claimed were also using his sewing machine designs, started to have some success in those legal efforts, Singer, worried that it might work against him, went on the offensive. So he tried to discredit Howe's position as inventor of many of the items that he claimed patent rights to. And he also started a smear campaign against Howe in the press, with which Howe fought with a libel suit. There was eventually a patent trial, and Howe was ultimately the winner in that legal battle.
Throughout all of this legal wrangling, Singer was producing sewing machines and refining his design. He partnered with another man, Edward Clark, in the meantime. In 1855, the Singer sewing machine won a first-place medallion at the Paris World's Fair after Clark submitted it to the exposition.
And the ire and the legal wrangling around the sewing machine and who had invented what did eventually die down. As part of that, in 1856, the Sewing Machine Trust, which was a combination patent held by Howe, Singer, and a few additional inventors who all had skin in the sewing machine game, was formed. And this rights agreement allowed all of the various players to benefit from the manufacture of the machine that all of them had really contributed to developing.
The year after the Sewing Machine Trust, in 1857, Singer and Clark formed I Am Singer & Company, and this was a really momentous step in the shift of sewing machines from industrial tools to home goods.
Clark and Singer very smartly started mass manufacturing sewing machine parts in New York, and in doing so, they made it possible to produce machines at a significantly reduced cost. And this meant that people could buy machines for home use for just $100. And they did. The Singer sewing machine was so successful that the company opened three more New York manufacturing facilities just 1 year later.
Additionally, Singer, who was guided by the astute business acumen of Edward Clark, set up rent-to-own payment plans where customers could pay a monthly rate for their new machine, eventually paying more than they would have if they had just bought it outright, but owning it at the end of the rental agreement and being able to use it in the meantime. Singer also started hiring women to demonstrate the machines instead of the male members of his team to prove that even the finest of ladies could handle the machinery that he built. And to really make sure his sewing machine became a standard in the homes of all respectable ladies, he offered machines at discounted prices to the wives of pastors and ministers of all denominations. So while Howe gets the credit for inventing the sewing machine most of the time, as we've talked about in that old episode, it's a lot more complicated than that. Singer is really the man who brought it into the home market.
In 1860, so just a few years after the partnership with Clark, I.M. Singer and Company was the largest manufacturer of sewing machines in the world. And this, the massive sales numbers that they were able to start making outside of the U.S. actually positioned the company really well to weather the storm of the U.S. Civil War intact.
Part of that success, particularly the personal wealth that Isaac Singer enjoyed, was the result of aggressive and often ruthless business practices on the entrepreneur's part.
When he had first started his company, you'll recall, he had gained financial backing and shop access from George B. Zeber and Orson C. Phelps. But he had absolutely no sentimentality about that relationship. In terms of Isaac Singer, he really didn't care for those men particularly, apparently. He bullied Phelps out of the company really early on. And then he pressured Zeber to sell his interest to him when Zeber was told he was quite ill and believed that he was at the end of his life.
Incidentally, Zeber was not either of those things, but while he was pondering his seemingly imminent death, Singer told him that he should wrap up his business affairs, take a buyout before he passed, so that would spare his grieving family the fiscal troubles that they would need to wrap up once he was gone. Singer got his buyout, but as it turned out, it had all been an elaborate trick on his part.
I feel like we're saying this over and over, but what a jerk. What a jerk. We are now going to speak a little bit more about Isaac's later life and how his philandering eventually caught up to him. We will say what a jerk several more times, I have no doubt. But first, we are going to pause and have a break and hear from one of our sponsors.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
We've had some podcasts on the show before about people who were really kind of ruthless in their business world and then also hoarded the profits. That was not Isaac Singer at all. He was flamboyant in his spending. He moved Marianne and their children from their humble home on the Lower East Side to a progressively nicer lodging as his success grew. And eventually they were on Fifth Avenue, which was home to only the wealthiest families.
His neighbors there never really accepted Isaac and Marianne, though they certainly partook in the huge parties that the duo hosted. The Singers were nouveau riche and utterly gauche in their taste. For example, while he was in New York, Singer's main means of transport was this black and bright yellow carriage that he had designed and had custom built.
This carriage was large. It needed at least 6 horses to pull it, so Isaac was contributing to the manure problem we discussed recently. Sometimes he had more than that on the team. He would have live musicians ride along with him so he could always have music, and as many as 31 passengers could ride in this vehicle, which also had an onboard bathroom and sleeper beds.
And he needed all those seats for his large and seemingly ever-growing family. As his fortune grew, he made an effort to reconnect with his eldest son from his first marriage. And in the early 1850s, when things were starting to really spark for him in the business world, he also started 2 more long-term affairs with women named Mary McGonigal and Mary Eastwood Walters, both of whom lived in New York City.
So this means that he still had his estranged wife, Catherine, as we said before, was a while before their divorce became final, as well as Marianne and these 2 new Marys. Of course, there were also more children with McGonigal and Walters, and in 1860, he finally did divorce Catherine, although he made her confess to adultery before he would give her her settlement payout of $10,000.
Yeah, and she had taken up residence, is my understanding, with another man at that point, but she hadn't lived with him for a long time, and he had been living with several other people. And so it would seem that now he could fulfill his promise that he would marry Marianne once his divorce was settled, 24 years after they first talked about it. She had been patiently waiting for a quarter of a century, but then he told her that he did not want her to have power over him, so he was not going to enter into a legal marriage. This is, again, a point where we say, what a jerk. Sorry.
Not long after this, Marianne spotted Isaac riding in a carriage with Mary McGonigal, and she began ranting at the 2 of them. Singer later beat her for her outburst. It was, not surprisingly, given his temper in business, not the first or last time that he was violent with a woman. He was, however, arrested this time because Marianne called the police.
Singer retired in 1862, though his company, of course, kept going strong. In 1863, the company incorporated as the Singer Manufacturing Company. It had gained 22 more patents at that point, and it was planning to launch an overseas factory, which it did in Glasgow, Scotland, in 1867.
When he retired, he moved to Europe. This is often characterized as flight from New York. That's because the Big Apple had grown complicated and fraught for this ostentatious and philandering entrepreneur. He was often being hounded by the press because of allegations of domestic abuse. And additionally, all this press meant that all these women who had set up households with him knew that they were not unique in terms of being his partner.
Yeah, he had basically led each of them to believe that they were living in a monogamous household, and that he just traveled a lot, but really he had multiple households throughout the city. Marianne Sponsler made a divorce case claim against Singer's estate. She claimed that they basically had a common law marriage. And while she was awarded a large alimony payout of $8,000 annually, Singer renegotiated through his attorneys to a much lower rate of $50 per week. Marianne ended up disgraced, however, and stripped of her alimony when it was revealed that she had married another man shortly after this settlement was reached. She was the one who ended up scandalized as an adulterer, despite Singer's constant infidelities to multiple women at once. The common law marriage was dissolved. She was left with nothing.
He had been the man of the house in three different houses at the same time, and he had 18 children. And in a deeply seedy move, Mary McGonigal's younger sister, Kate, traveled to Europe with him as his companion when he fled, although the two of them didn't stay together long, and where she went from there is not clear.
In 1863, while he returned on a visit to New York to settle his divorce from Sponsler and dissolve his partnership with Clark as part of the incorporation of the company, Singer married his second wife, who was already very, very pregnant. Wife number two was a woman named Isabel Eugenie Boyce Somerville. She was recently divorced herself and was just a young woman in her 20s.
And she was not any of the other women we have already referenced.
No, he was a new one. She was a new one.
Yeah. So after he married for the second time, Isaac and his bride lived in the Fifth Avenue home. During this time, his first wife, Catherine, attempted to renegotiate the terms of their settlement again. This resulted in a rift between Isaac and the oldest son that he had had with Catherine, as he had asked the young man to testify in court against his mother, threatening, quote, take your choice, your mother with poverty or me with riches. He also threatened to kill his son, William, when William refused to testify. The court case was eventually dropped.
Yeah, we don't really know, like, how that played out and how the case went away, but William never had to testify one way or the other, but the relationship was pretty damaged. In 1864, Singer and Isabel built a new home called The Castle in Yonkers. And there they threw a lavish housewarming party, but very few people attended. They still had the problem that people just thought they were nouveau riche and they weren't really all that respectable. During the post-Civil War Reconstruction era, and after only a short time living at the castle, the Singers moved to Paris in 1866.
As the Franco-Prussian War broke out in 1870, Isaac and the family moved to England, where they settled permanently. He had a massive French Renaissance-style home built in South Devon called the Wigwam. And in it, he included a private theater along with every other lavish room imaginable where he and the family would put on plays.
And one of the interesting things about Isaac Singer's many romantic partners and all of those children, he ended up with 24 documented by the time it was all done because he and Isabel had several. While he could not stay true to one woman, he really was pretty devoted to his kids, with the exception of his eldest son, William, after that failed bribery attempt for perjury that did not work out. And his home in England was built in grand scale so that all of the rest of his known children could live there with him.
At the Wigwam, it seemed like Singer found a sort of peace that had eluded him throughout his life up to that point. He threw three spectacular parties there every year, on the 4th of July, Christmas Day, and his birthday. He even played Father Christmas and gave out toys and food to less fortunate children in the area.
And several of his kids ended up connected to rather notable Europeans. His son Paris, who was his son with Isabel, had a child with Isadora Duncan, who is known as the mother of modern dance. And if that name is ringing sort of a grisly bell, it's because, yes, she is the person you're thinking of that died in a rather horrific car accident when her long dramatic scarf, which was blowing in the wind, became entangled in the wheel and then rear axle of her vehicle.
Isaac Singer died from heart disease on July 24th, 1875. He was 63 at the time, and his wealth, which was estimated at $18 million when he died, just invited immediate squabbling from the many families he had started through the years. But he had carefully arranged his will so that the money was divided into 60 equal parts and distributed among his family members, some of them receiving multiple portions.
Yeah, it was very, very clear that he had favorites. Like, some kids would get, you know, four or five portions, and others would get only a couple. And while William, with whom he had had that huge falling out, received only the relatively tiny sum of $500, and William's sister Lillian, who was also Catherine's child, only got $1,000, An interesting thing happened here, which is that the other illegitimate Singer children, who had fared much better in the will, each gave up a portion of their inheritance to supplement those amounts that William and Lillian received. And so then of his many wives and other paramours, only Isabel was recognized in the will with any sort of monetary payout.
And while the Singer Company and its manufacture of sewing machines did go through some bumpy times over the years, as we alluded to earlier, it still remains a recognized and pretty respectable name in the home sewing market.
Yeah, you know, all, more than 200 years after he was born, his company keeps on trucking. I have a Singer that is from 1911 that has been in my husband's family since it came off the manufacturing line.
Mm-hmm.
I need to replace one of the belt or the one belt on them.
There are,
that's the one thing. They'll go forever, but they do need some maintenance.
Yeah, there are some similarly old Singers in my family. And then the one that I learned to sew on was my mother's. And that one was probably from, like the, at the latest early 70s, because she would have bought it before I was born. And then I used that as my sewing machine for a while, and then we sort of traded sewing machines after a while. So I'm pretty sure that one is still in their home and still working.
Probably. That was when they, normally the home sewing market, even though they were the modernized machines, not the old, you know, cast iron based treadles, they still had metal gears, whereas there was a shift later to plastic gears, so they did not last quite as long. And if you sewed a whole lot over the course of several days, I discovered the hard way you could fuse those gears together.
Oh, whoops.
but yeah, I mean, his legacy still remains, and it always kind of cracks me up when you see like, him listed as like a great American entrepreneur. And I'm like, well, he did some cool stuff, but we got to take a look at what was really going on in his life. 'Cause he was maybe not the best dude. Highs and lows with that one.
We have a number of like inventors of things with really checkered pasts in our archive.
Yeah.
It's I don't know.
Yeah, I also want to, you know, I should give him some extra guilt on that manure crisis thing, because while we talked about the one huge carriage, he had many, many carriages, and he liked to race them up and down Fifth Avenue to show off. So he was contributing more than just that 6 to 9 horse team that carried the big, crazy size one. Oh, Isaac Singer. You're a mess.
You also have some listener mail?
I do. I have a couple of pieces. I'm going to try to be quick because I know this episode ran really long. The first is from our listener, Abby, and she says, "Dear Tracy and Holly, I'm a longtime listener and was so excited to hear you did a podcast on the Achaemenid Empire because I first started listening to Stuff You Missed in History Class in 2009 while living in the lands of the ancient Achaemenids. I was blessed to serve as a Peace Corps volunteer in Turkmenistan from 2008 to 2010, and I squealed with excitement when I heard you all mention Turkmenistan on the podcast, much like I do whenever I hear that name. Your podcast holds a truly special place in my heart because of my time in Turkmenistan, which was equally one of the most fulfilling and lonely periods of my life, and it provided me with solace. I served teaching English as a foreign language as a volunteer in a village about 20 miles outside of the capital city. My village, which I am not going to try to pronounce, but it was named after a famous Turkmen poet, and she worked at the local school teaching English to 4th to 8th grade students. And she was the first American volunteer to live in that village and was therefore the first native English speaker that many of those villagers had ever seen. So she needed to rely on her knowledge of the Turkmen language to get by every day. She says, "While I love teaching and I truly appreciated my experiences in Turkmenistan, life could become very lonely when your communication is limited. I was never very good at languages. I literally crave for conversation and media in English. Another Peace Corps volunteer turned me on to your podcast, and it became a great joy in my life when English media was difficult to come by. When I was lonely or having a tough time and I had rewatched all my episodes of The Office or Gilmore Girls, your podcast really helped me get by because there was so much content that I could listen to, and it actually felt like my brain was stimulated. While I realize it was your show's predecessors who got me through some tough points in my personal Peace Corps experience, I am confident that you ladies are providing solace for Peace Corps volunteers around the world, and for that, I thank you. And she sent us some beautiful pictures from Turkmenistan, and I just want to say thank you to her as well. One of my best friends growing up and her husband both served in the Peace Corps. I so appreciate the work that those people do, so thank you, thank you, thank you, Abby. I also wanted to say a quick congratulations to Bethany and her husband Patrick, who sent us a birth announcement of their baby Lucy. Bethany mentions that she listened to the podcast a lot when she was on bed rest during her pregnancy, and that she started the podcast at one point when Lucy was having some issues staying calm, and she started the podcast for herself, but it actually stopped the baby crying immediately. I'm shocked that I would have this effect on babies, since I'm scared of them and they can smell fear, but I'm glad it helped in this case. So congratulations, Bethany and Patrick, on your new little one. And I hope you guys are all doing great. If you would like to write to us, you can do so at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com. You can also connect with us at facebook.com/missedinhistory. On Twitter @MissedInHistory, at Pinterest.com/MissedInHistory, at MissedInHistory.tumblr.com, and on Instagram @MissedInHistory. If you want to learn a little bit more about a subject related to today's episode, you can go to HowStuffWorks.com, type in the word sewing machine in the search bar, and you will get an article called How Sewing Machines Work. So if you want to really see how Isaac Singer's work culminated in one pretty standardized way of sewing machines being put together, you will learn it all there. If you want to visit us online, you can do that at MissedInHistory.com, where we have every episode of the show ever, including the ones by those predecessors that helped Abby get through her Peace Corps time, as well as show notes for any of the newer episodes that Tracy and I have been working on together since we've been here. So there are also some other goodies on there, so come and visit us at MissedInHistory.com and HowStuffWorks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ+ bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.
Looking to part ways with complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping? Then give your business the edge it needs with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Keep everything simple with clear upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there. And keep it all reliable with on-time ground shipments. It's time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at USPS.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.